So good morning again. It's still me. This is the mandatory disclosure that we have no financial interests. All right, so please allow me to frame the whole discussion of community health workers, why it has become so relevant to our healthcare system today. If you look at the conditions that were emerging 100 years ago, 110 years ago, it really 110 years ago was when medicine was developing its character, its purpose. The practice of medicine and the system of healthcare in the United States. And if you look at, we borrowed these slides from the Chief Public Health Officer of the United States, Dr. Kyu Ree, who came to speak at our local conference. If you look at the conditions that were driving the healthcare system 100 years ago, what do you see? What kind of conditions were they? They were infectious diseases, right? All that stuff in green. Well, if you think about it, if you're evolving and developing a healthcare system in the presence of infectious diseases, then think about how that happens, right? You get an infectious disease, you go to the doctor gives you a shot, and you're okay, right? You don't really have any personal responsibility for your condition. You go to the doctor takes care of it. Even with STDs, if you get syphilis, you go to the doctor, you get a shot, you know, a day later you're okay, right? You don't have to change your behaviors, you don't have to do anything about it. If you get it again, you go back to the doctor and you get another shot, and you're okay again, right? So in that setting, and by the way, this is not a critique of medicine. Medicine was actually incredibly successful at dealing with these issues 100 years ago, 110 years ago. But in the process, what happened is that community became dependent on this type of care. Community, individuals, families, neighbors, and community at large really didn't have to do too much about their health condition. The emerging public health forces were providing clean water, they were providing sewage, the healthcare system was providing treatment that took care of all our problems. And so community came to depend on that. And as a consequence of that, really became, on many levels, disempowered because they became dependent on somebody else caring for you. Does that make sense? Okay, well, if you fast forward to today, what are the issues driving healthcare today? That was a real question. Right, today we have chronic diseases. And chronic diseases are very different from infectious diseases, right? The assault of chronic diseases on our communities today have many root causes that are social and structural in nature. And they're really outside the realm of medicine. Medicine is defined as the diagnosis and treatment of disease and injury, right? That's not what chronic disease is. And so, but however, chronic diseases are producing symptoms, signs and symptoms that are presenting in the doctor's office, but that medicine doesn't really have the answer for. The answer to chronic diseases is really in the community. And we're fond of saying that health happens in the community. The treatment of illness happens in the medical system, in the healthcare system. But health really happens in community. So at the very time when we need community to step up and individuals to step up and be responsible for their own behaviors and their own conduct, it is at the same time that we have a fragmented, disempowered community that really has come to depend on something very different. And so that's the dilemma that we're facing today in healthcare. The system is fragmented, the healthcare system is fragmented and inefficient simply because the conditions that are presenting at the healthcare system are not medical ones. They're social and social economic ones. And so this is the realm of CHWs. This is where we live. We live in the social determinants of health. Oh. Okay, so clearly the challenges to our healthcare system today are focused on chronic diseases, and more importantly, they're focused on preventing and managing chronic diseases in addition to treating them. And the charge, as complex as it might be, the charge that we're responsible for is to really rebuild the power of community and individuals to address these issues. The other big challenge to our healthcare system is the spiraling healthcare costs, which Jacqueline will speak to much more eloquently than I can. But it should be clear to all of us at this time that the cost of healthcare cannot continue to spiral out of control like this. It is literally impossible to maintain this kind of economic cost to this country, and it will very quickly bankrupt this country if we continue to function under the same payment systems and the same systems of care. And then lastly, I would say that the biggest challenge perhaps is the complexity of the illnesses that are presenting in modern healthcare systems, because it's not just syphilis anymore, it's not just pneumonia anymore. The issues are very complex now, and they involve people living in extremely difficult life circumstances and who have multiple chronic conditions. So it's becoming harder and harder to silo people into these discrete disease-focused, time-limited interventions that has become the customary way of financing healthcare. And what's really required is a fundamental and core shift in the way we address illness and disease, and shift that focus to a concentration on prevention and wellness. And I have to be emphatic about this, we do not presently have a system that delivers health. We have a system that delivers care for illness, and that needs to fundamentally change, and it needs to happen pretty immediately. It's an urgent situation. And lastly, I want to say how the issue of depression is just really permeating everything that's going on in our healthcare system. And there seems to be a total disregard for the enormity of the epidemic of depression that's going on in our communities and our societies, and a continued focus on specific diseases when the underlying treatment really involves dealing with the depression, widespread as it is. So why CHWs? Well, there's a number of reasons. There's a burgeoning literature that demonstrates CHW effectiveness, very specifically in the areas of chronic disease prevention and management, especially there's volumes of evidence-based. People always want evidence-based. I might address that if I have time, because I think that whole RCT gold standard has done its damage already, and we need to move on to another way of evaluating interventions. But the fact is that there is an enormous evidence base out there that proves CHW effectiveness in asthma, in diabetes, in hypertension, in obesity. There's just widespread effectiveness. And also the fact that CHW is an enormous workforce. We have an estimated 11,000 community health workers in New York State. And this is from the HRSA National CHW Workforce Study. And I think there's an estimated 120,000 in the United States as a whole, the United States and Hawaii and Alaska. And so that's a significant workforce that if we can identify and describe, that we can then apply to address some of these issues that they're so competent at addressing. In New York State, we have ample evidence that CHWs increase access to healthcare, they increase the quality of healthcare, they help eliminate inequities, and they improve outcomes. Now, the last time I read the health reform law, that's exactly what it calls for. That's exactly what it mandates. The law of the land today mandates that we increase access, improve quality, and lower costs. And the literature says that that's exactly what CHWs do. So not only are they doing heroic work and improving outcomes and helping people lead the healthier lives, but they're at the same time reducing the cost of those efforts, which is admirable. And lastly, CHW help meet mandates of federal law in that they improve patient-centered medical homes. In its current configuration, medical homes models are not very different from what existed before. It's a different collection of practitioners, maybe, and it's named a little differently. But in the eyes of community, they're seeing the same thing they've been seeing all along. They're not seeing anything different. They're not seeing anything that's really centered around them. And they're certainly not seeing anything that looks like a home. So you know, we can call it what we want to call it, but in the eyes of community, it's just more of the same. Community health workers can help change that dilemma. They can really provide a different face to healthcare and a different approach. Okay. So, for many of you who are here and are my friends and colleagues, I know very well that I'm preaching to the choir. But I think for those of you who haven't, who are here to gather information or to perhaps learn about CHWs, it's important to speak to you a little bit about who we are. January of 2009, the Executive Office of the President published the new standard occupational categories that the Department of Labor was to use for the 2010 census. This CHW section undertook a national campaign to get CHWs included as a unique standard occupational category. The fight started, I guess, about 3 years ago. It started under my leadership of the section and culminated under the leadership of Lisa Renee Holderby, our current chair. It was a three-year process. But we did get the Department of Labor to accept us as a unique standard occupational category. In the process of doing that, we had to come up with a national definition of CHWs. And that national definition is in the little one of bifold brochure that is in your possession. And so I'm not going to tell you the entire definition, but I do want to address some key considerations in that definition. And one is that CHWs are frontline public health professionals. Now, that not only is that part of the Department of Labor definition, but it's also enshrined in the Patient Affordability Care Act, Affordable Care Act. In that piece of legislation, there is a section that defines a couple of terms that are used in the legislation. One of those terms is public health professionals. And in the definition of health professionals, CHWs are explicitly listed. So previous controversies about whether we're lay or whether we're para or we're quasi or we're almost, that stuff is done. It's moot. Okay, it is the law of the land in this country that community health workers are health professionals. The other big thing about the definition of CHWs is that a CHW is defined by trust. That's pretty unique in a profession. Professions are usually described by services and bodies of knowledge that they possess. This profession is actually described by a trust that we enjoy, that we have in the communities in which we serve. And it's important because the word trust is actually in our definition. And what that means is that if you betray that trust, then you've surrendered your definition as a practitioner in this field. And that carries all kinds of ethical issues with it. Specifically because our healthcare system is so enshrined in funding very time-limited, very disease-focused interventions. When you're working in a community based on trust and building relationships in that trust with individuals and communities, then you're really not at liberty to say 2 years down the line, oh, sorry, my grant is over, I gotta go. You can't do that because that community knows you. You see them. You see them in the laundromat. You see them in the movie. You see them in the daycare centers. You see them in the schools. You see them in the churches. And so there's a real tension there between how we finance health in this country and the role of community health workers in supporting health. The other big thing about the definition is that it involves CHWs are described as having shared life experiences and circumstances with the populations whom they serve. This is really important because CHWs have real on the ground knowledge and experience with what the people that they're working with are struggling. They have experience with the complexities of dealing with the many complex issues that are facing individuals in their communities. And shared knowledge, shared experiences is really very, very different from just knowledge. You know, you can read about hunger, you can hang out with somebody who's hungry, you can work with somebody who's hungry, but it's another thing to go to bed hungry yourself and to have to do it repeatedly. That's a very different thing, and it's something that describes CHWs. And lastly, our definition describes us as agents for change, so that we're not just promoting the status quo, we're not just the voice of the healthcare system, coming out, you know, we're not just extenders of the healthcare system that carry the voice of the healthcare system to communities, but although we do that, we're also the voice of community to the healthcare system to help the healthcare system become more appropriate, both culturally and practically appropriate. Is that making sense? Yeah, I come from a church background, so I need a little more. Some amens, yeah. So let me talk to you a little bit about what CHWs do, because there's also a lot of confusion about this. CHWs, yeah, clearly the traditional roles that we all know as CHWs serve as liaisons between communities and health and social service systems, and they do improve all these outcomes that we mentioned before. So we do the traditional stuff that everybody talks about. We do outreach, we do inreach. Actually, inreach is a big role. Many people think we just have to do case finding and screening and that kind of stuff. But we also work within organizations because people are lost when they come in too, just as much as they're lost outside, just because of the fragmented nature of our healthcare system. And so we do both outreach and inreach. We do advocacy, we do linking to services, we do screening. We do interpretation and translation. We do follow-up, home visiting. We do medication, adhering support. We do all that social support stuff. And a lot of people know about that stuff. But what I really want to focus on about what CHWs do is how they build community. And they build community really by combating social isolation and exclusion. When I hinted at depression before, I cannot tell you how many hundreds of homes I've entered and how many people's lives I've entered, especially when I was working in emergency interventions for murder and suicide, where people are living really in complete and absolute isolation. I cannot count how many homes I've gone into where people never, ever leave their homes for a number of reasons, whatever the reasons. People literally have no friends, no one who ever comes by, no one who ever calls, but just live in total and complete isolation. And the conditions that accompany that situation are abhorrent. They're awful, ridiculous ways and totally neglectful of humanity, concern for each other and the love that Cornel West talked about that is at the root of humanity. It's an incredibly, incredibly heartbreaking, sad situation. And that's where CHWs live. Many programs think, oh, you know, on your first visit, you got to check this and do this and do this. And I can't tell you how many CHWs that I've worked with tell me, you know, they don't need any of this. They just needed somebody to talk to for a half hour. They haven't done that in 3 years. You know, so we really need to look differently, look at what does health mean? And I'm glad that both of our principal plenary speakers really addressed this issue as a core cause of the illness in our societies. Thirdly, I want to talk about CHW's role in addressing social determinants of health, because it really is the social determinants of health that are driving the issues that are affecting people today. And these social determinants of health are just not the purview of our current healthcare system. But it is absolutely and completely the world in which CHWs live and work. And I can't say it enough, but we lower healthcare costs, folks. thank you, Nell. So I'm gonna turn over to Jacqueline Martinez, who is my colleague in this effort, and then we'll come back and describe our efforts a little more in detail.
Good morning, everyone. As Sergio already pointed to, community health workers have been well documented in the literature. What we do know is that they, in fact, really help improve health outcomes. I'm here representing the New York State Health Foundation. You'll hear a little bit more about who we are, but we're really focused on improving the outcomes of communities and across the board, increasing access and quality of services, health outcomes, especially for those people with chronic conditions. As Sergio already mentioned, it's the driving cost of our healthcare system right now. So if we improve improve chronic conditions, and we can really get at this whole issue of lowering healthcare costs for our country. Community health workers also begin to address some of the persistent and the underlying causes of ill health, which are inequities in several communities, trying to break down those barriers that are related to racism or classism. But community health workers break down those walls and really help people access health in places that they've normally been marginalized in. Community health workers also improve the social capital and community connectedness of a community. They are the ones who understand the resources that are available for people and make that connection for them. Healthier communities and individuals is what community health workers have been known for. It's not just delivering one-on-one chronic case management. It's really about the health of a community. It's about mobilizing resources and mobilizing people to address their own health conditions. So if you think about communities, and I'll mention the South Bronx, I'm from New York, but many of you know about the South Bronx because it has some of the worst indicators in the nation. And community health workers really try to address the root causes that affect that community as a whole. So it's not just about making a home visit, it's about galvanizing the support so that the leadership can address the key components that are affecting the community's health. Community health workers have been well documented to lower the usage of resource intensive emergency room services. They also have been known to lower hospital costs and increase the use of prevention and primary care services. I'm going to go through a couple of the studies that have in fact documented some of this work. The first one I'll just mention is the one, the RCT initiative that was done in Boston that was shown to increase access to health insurance coverage. And we all know that it's not just about having a health insurance card in our hands. Many of us know how difficult it is to navigate the health services once you have that insurance. So it's not just increasing access by signing people up to health insurance, but it's giving people the tools and empowering them to understand how to even begin to navigate a very complicated healthcare system. Community health workers have been shown to, like I mentioned already, reduce emergency room visits. In Baltimore, a study showed a 27% reduction in Medicaid expenses for patients with diabetes, with an average savings of almost $2,200 per patient per year. Those are significant lowering in costs. If you think about what a person with diabetes needs in order to maintain their health, they need to make sure they go to the doctors every 3 months to make sure their blood glucose levels is under control. They need to make sure their blood pressure and their cholesterol is under control. And if these things, if these, what they call the ABCs of diabetes are under control, then people can avoid the very costly and very traumatizing expenses, both human and financial, to diabetes, whether it's an amputation or kidney dialysis or having to end up with less parts of your body just because the control of diabetes wasn't in time at the appropriate place. And that's what community health workers do. Like Sergio said, taking care of health happens in the community, not in the healthcare setting. And so community health workers go beyond those walls to help people manage their conditions so they don't end up in the emergency room and don't end up with amputations and don't end up with kidney dialysis. Community health workers have also been known to return this whole ROI, which we can have a discussion on today on whether or not that's the appropriate way of really documenting whether or not it's an investment worth making. But community health workers have been shown right here in Denver with our Denver health system to actually have a return investment of almost $2 per one invested in community health workers. The CHWs that were invested in here in Denver actually did a series of things, including helping people access health insurance, but also went beyond that to help people control very difficult and complex chronic conditions. They've also been shown to decrease the per capita expenses in Hawaii, which has been shown the greatest decrease is 97% in an asthma program that was led by community health workers. So we've talked enough about how beneficial community health workers are. But the reality is that in New York City, and I'm sure in many of the states that are represented here today with our audience, there are several challenges to really move forward the field. And I also want to just point on what Sergio just said, is that we've come a long way in the sense of the Department of Labor now recognizes community health workers as a workforce. Community health workers now have a job description that's at a federal level. It's been documented at a federal level. But the reality is that at a statewide level, there's still no reimbursable billable scope of practice. And part of the problem is that people fully don't understand the scope of practice of who community health workers are and what they do. And the training standards vary from program to program. Now, the real problem has been that for the last 30 or more years, community health worker programs have been funded by categorical grant funding. Foundations just like ours have been responsible for funding programs for a two-year period for a very specific disease. Once the money is over, once the program is over, the community health worker program is over. And so you're left trying to figure out where these community health workers can find employment, starting the whole training process over again. It's a waste of resources, and it's a waste of time, both at the human capital level and at the financial level. There's a lack of sustainable funding streams that's supporting community health workers at the state level. If community health workers have already been shown to lower the cost of care, then why aren't we integrating them in our financing system for health care? I already mentioned this categorical funding for health in general predominates our nation. It's definitely been endemic in the community health worker field, where, again, there's a grant for $100,000 to hire 3 community health workers, and once the grant is over, the funding is over. And we also have to get away from, and I think Sergio and I present this really well together, because we have very ambitious view of what the world should look like when it comes to health. See, the problem is not just categorical funding, which in fact has now defined how we define health, which is very specific to a disease. Even our foundation right now, and I'll talk a little bit more about priority areas, has 2 priority areas focused. One focused on diabetes and the other one on substance use and mental health, when the reality is that people living in communities are struggling with mental health and diabetes, and that if you have a diabetes, if someone tells you you have diabetes, the likelihood of you going through a short-term depression is pretty high. You're being told that your whole life has to change now because you have diabetes. And the same thing with some of the medications we know that are out there right now to help control diabetes, that are increasing the risk of mental health conditions. And so the reality is that how we define health is ill-equipped in how health is really experienced in the communities. And, you know, there's also this challenge of how we evaluate the effectiveness of work. We do focus too hard on health outcomes without looking at the process that happens. And again, I stand here representing a health foundation, because a lot of times we're responsible to how we want to define what makes a program effective or not. The reality is that we have to report to a board who wants to have an impact on the health of a community, and we have to design evaluations to produce those outcomes. But in that, we have to think creatively of how we can document how community health workers reduce some of the things that we already talked about: health inequities, health disparities, the whole issue of social capital and community interconnectedness. I'm going to just go really quickly, and then Sergio's going to go into more details to share with you what it is that we're trying to embark in New York State. We designed an initiative that's co-funded with the New York State Health Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation, and our goal at the end of the day is to get a reimbursable scope of practice for community health workers. If we walk away successfully from this initiative, it's that either Medicaid or other forms of payment for community health workers will figure out a way how to support their role as part of healthcare teams. And I use that word very loosely right now. Sergio talked about healthcare homes. They haven't really defined who should be part of that team that should really be taking care of people with chronic conditions. To get there, we realized that we have to standardize the scope of practice for New York State, and we also have to figure out how to implement certification or credentialing initiative for community health workers in the state of New York. And I see some of you shaking your heads. I'm sure you're coming from states who've already gone through this process, and we've actually tailored our action plan very similar to what Minnesota has already done in the state to try and not only standardize training and certification for community health workers, but more importantly, institute a reimbursable model for the sustainability of community health workers. And I'll stop there and take it over to Sergio.
Thank you, Jacqueline. I told you she's so much more eloquent than I am. Before I go on, can I ask, is Nelly Leon in the audience? No? Okay, Thank you. Okay, so before I go on, I want to make it clear that we're not here to critique the medical practice or the healthcare industry. What doctors do is critically and vitally important to our society and to the health of our communities. That is not our point, to criticize that. Our point is actually to emphasize the importance of what doctors do and to emphasize the fact that they, addressing social determinants of health and the complex issues facing us today is not their bailiwick, and it is irresponsible of us to expect them to be, to expect medical providers to deal with these complex and time-consuming issues. It is just not within, it's not possible within the little 15 minutes that they have to address the really vital medical, physical issues that are presenting in their offices. And it doesn't really make sense for us to put this burden on them when there is a workforce out there that is already dedicated and committed to that effort. So having cleared that up, I want to talk a little bit about, so you say we want to organize CHW statewide to create stable financing. Well, that's a vision. You know, that's it's an ambitious vision, but visions have to be ambitious, right? So I want to talk to you a little bit about the nuts and bolts about how we've decided to go about doing this. And we're blessed that several states before us have actually tried to create statewide standards for our practice, and not necessarily globally addressing the workforce in their states. But in some states, it was focused on maternal child health interventions. In some states, it was focused on chronic disease management. But there are a number of states who have provided statewide standards for all CHWs in that state. And we've learned from the struggles and challenges faced by those states. And so being blessed with that experience and wisdom, we've learned, for one thing, that not providing CHW leadership for those efforts can cause changes in the way CHWs operate and in the way that they're viewed in their communities. And that really might, in fact, challenge some of those core principles that I identified you as describing who we are. So the imposition of a credential on CHWs without the CHW voice and without CHW leadership of this effort, we've learned, is probably not the most effective way to go. And so what we've decided to do is, throughout New York State, to really nurture, to identify, to go out there to strategically located areas of our state. Our state is very diverse, as many are. And so we've decided to go out to strategic locations in New York State and really beat the bushes and find CHWs and their advocates and pull them together into clusters of activity that would really start to organize, come together and discuss and consider some of the emergency policy and practice issues that are affecting them. In some cases, there were some local networks already or that had existed in the past but had fallen apart for a number of reasons. In some places, in New York City, in the downstate section of our city, there was a very vibrant and active local network already in existence, which is of an independent professional association that that I direct and has been in existence for about 9 years now. And so, so the foundation asked that local network, which had a lot of experience, had been incorporated in the state of New York as a 501c3, and is really has a very robust and active policy committee, to mentor and to really go out to the rest of the state and to identify these clusters of CHWs and really mentor them and support them to become organized and address some of these issues. Okay. So we have to date, we actually just filed our first end of the year report. This is a 2-year grant, and we completed the first year November 1st. And to date, we've identified and helped develop centers of activity, local networks in 5 localities. And those include New York City, which already existed, but we've really supported their organizational development. In New York City, we've also identified a cluster in our capital region in Albany, and then we've identified clusters in Western New York in the areas of Buffalo and Niagara Falls and Rochester, which is also Western New York, but a very different place and wanting to maintain their own local character. And then we're the North Country up by Montreal, up in our mountains, the Adirondacks. We're facing a number of challenges up there just because it's such a rural area and really difficult to access. And now that it's getting cold, I don't know how I'm going to get up there. The important thing about this effort is that in going out to these areas and really trying to help CHWs and CHW stakeholders to come together and start discussing and becoming organized, it's really, really important that you be respectful about the way you approach communities, and that is at the core nature of CHWs. But we're really very cognizant and very aware of the need to honor their desire to maintain their local character. So we're not going to these locations and saying, hey, here's the blueprint, we want you to do this, and here's $20,000. What we're really going up there is helping them to come together to determine what that is and what it is that they want to become. In some localities where we've been working, the local networks have decided that they want to incorporate and that they want to become a local CHW network. In other localities, the clusters are deciding, well, we don't really want to dedicate all of that energy and effort to incorporating ourselves, but we want to be organized and perhaps become a chapter of this statewide network that you develop. And perhaps we want to participate in the governance of that, but we're not all that interested in creating our own governance structures where we don't want to put the energy and money into that. So and in the process of doing this stuff, we're absolutely and completely respectful of those desires, those local desires. Okay. The other big thing that we wanted to do is to foster local leadership, local CHW, because we know that this is vital to our success. And so what we're really doing is going out to these areas and encouraging them and providing any technical support and assistance and financial support that we can to help them do what it is they want to do, with the ultimate vision of coming together as a statewide federation to be able to inform some of these emerging issues. And lastly, because training and organizing is at the heart of what we do, we're using training in core competencies and conferencing as the tools to help people come together and organize. We find that the offer of training is usually very attractive to both CHWs and their employers, and so that's a tack we've taken. And I got to tell you, from the ground, what this really requires is a lot of face-to-face conversations. April, my partner in this effort, and I spend a lot of time in airports and train stations. We spend a lot of time. Sometimes we'll travel, 6 to 8 hours a day just to go to an hour and a half meeting to meet with folks, because really face-to-face interactions and building relationships is how organizing happens. And of course, our ultimate goal is to convene all these regional clusters of activity or local networks, whatever emerges, into this statewide federation. In order to develop stable financing, and I want to reinforce that we're not only talking about Medicaid reimbursement here. We're talking about really fundamentally shifting financing systems. So we're talking about private models, we're talking about corporate models, we're talking about self-insured models, Ford Motor Company, IBM Corporation that pays their own health expenses for their employees. There's no reason why we can't develop private corporate models to sustain the CHW workforce as well. But in order to reach the ultimate goal of stable financing, there are a couple of things that we need to put in place. One is that the scope of practice of CHWs is not discrete. It's not described discreetly, and it's not understood. So when you hire a carpenter, you know what a carpenter's scope of practice is, and you know what you're looking for when you go out there, right? You don't hire a carpenter to fix your pipes, because that's not in their scope of practice, right? But our CHW scope of practice is not quite as understood, and so we really need this statewide federation to address that issue and come to a statewide consensus about what that scope is, so that then when we have that, we can develop training standards and certificate process that we can then hang payment on. Does that make sense to you logistically? Yeah? Okay. I want to emphasize that we're not talking about a standard training or a standard statewide curriculum. What we're talking about is developing curriculum standards, and then any organization or any facility that can meet those standards can then conduct these trainings. Well, we addressed this. I just want to say my colleague from Columbia University, Sally Findley, is not here. I guess she's on the way. I haven't heard from her today. But Columbia has, the Mailman School of Public Health does have a long history of educating the public health and conducting research in many, many of the issues that affect us. And of course, the foundation, I gotta say, is not only funding this effort, but is really very intimately involved in the process of it and is contributing incredible and amazing in-kind and technical and professional assistance to our efforts, because they are quite ambitious. So lastly, I wanna talk about lessons learned. And these are really important, and I'm gonna close real, I promise now. The one thing that we've learned is most important is to be absolutely diligent about your vision. If your vision is to develop the community health worker practice, then you really, it requires incredible diligence to stay on that vision. There are enormous forces out there working very hard to shift your vision away to whatever their agenda is. And so it really requires an incredible amount of diligence on our part to stay focused on developing CHW leadership to help inform the development of our vision and mission. We found very early on that it was really, really important to develop very clear and concise messages around what CHWs are and what we do. It's often very hard for us, those of us who are so passionate about our work, to describe our work in a way in an elevator speech. You know, we get very flowery and we get very passionate and excited, and we start talking about things that people just don't get. And so we've actually brought on a communication consultant to help us really hammer out a really concise and precise message about who CHWs are and what our efforts are, what our project is. We also found it increasingly important to be very aware and preserve and honor the core principles of our efforts throughout this process. And those primarily include issues of self-determination and CHW leadership. We must not allow others to describe who we are, because others don't know who we are. And even if they are in the positions of power and authority to conduct such efforts, and there are many, you know, we must be constantly aware of those efforts and push back to insist on self-determination and CHW leadership. And of course, maybe this all sums up in the idea of we have to be flexible, clearly, because we're bringing together people from very different backgrounds and very different fields and very different agendas. But at the same time that we're being flexible, we really have to be principled in our efforts and loyal to our visions and missions. I think one of the big issues that's going to emerge, and this has been the biggest challenge for other states, is what is governance of this practice going to look like? Because, of course, it is governance of the practice that's going to determine how we evolve and how we develop and the character, the presence that we present in our communities. And that's laden with potential for enormous harm. And so we have to be always aware of and considerate and open to discussions about what that governance might be. We don't know yet. Maintaining CHW's leadership is a constant effort. It's not a one-shot deal. It's nothing, something that you say once, but it's something that you have to say in practically every conversation. And lastly, I want to say that if you're going to do grassroots organizing like this, then you really have to be very aware and prepared to negotiate with the various agendas and purposes of the multiple stakeholders that are involved. They bring their own agenda. They bring their own culture to the discussion. And so you really need to prepare to deal with those. And lastly, I would say it is critically important to draw on the experiences of others, because there are many who have gone through this process and are giving us the opportunity to learn from their successes and challenges. So thank you very much. That's our funding, very generous, and that's who we are. Thank you.
Thank you so much.